Hey, good morning. Great to have you on the podcast, Arun. How's it going today?
Great. Thank you so much, Martin. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Perfect.
My
Yeah,
pleasure.
really excited to get into some of your background and your the wealth of knowledge. But I thought we'd just start off with your introduction. How did you get introduced into manufacturing? How did you end up in automotive?
Okay. I started out studying mechanical engineering back in India. My origins come from South India. I did mechanical engineering. In fact, I wanted to be a software engineer, but my father wanted me to be a mechanical engineer. So we struck a deal. I became a mechanical engineer and said I would learn all the software on the side. So I did do learn IT stuff on the side. I have a diploma in information technology and networking and so on. And then this helped me. When I decided to come for my master's here at, in Columbus, Ohio, I came to Ohio State University and pursued my industrial and systems engineering. That's where I got introduced to manufacturing and especially metal forming, forging, and stamping technologies. I did research with Dr. Tylan Alton at Ohio State University. So this is my first exposure to manufacturing research. And I got hooked onto it. I was able to use all my skill sets when it comes to what I learned in metal forming and also my software skill sets in programming as a research associate with Dr. Alton. And that proceeded, and I graduated doing research and stamping. But then I ended up joining Hirschvogel Incorporated here in Columbus, Ohio, as a process engineer. That's my journey to come into manufacturing. And this is heavy metal forging industry, but we do it in a high-tech way. So I was excited to see machines which were worth millions of dollars, pressing metal and converting them into shape and giving them the strength that's needed for the industry. And we do that millions of times over the year and even the month. So we ship millions of product. That's my journey into manufacturing per se. And I spent a lot of time on the floor doing specific process engineering work that gave me the hands-on knowledge as to how to deal with process variables, how to handle variation, how to address them, and how to use my research skill sets to optimize the process.
So that's really interesting. Do you think that combination, that skill set that you've got of the mechanical, the kind of fundamental understanding of the mechanical processes combined with what you've learned about software and I guess kind of data and analytics along the way has brought you some, some kind of super skills in that area that's given you an advantage, a competitive advantage, do you think? So what do you think, bringing those two skill sets together, what do you think that kind of enables?
So one of the things that I notice is you usually have an engineer who knows mechanical stuff, who learns about hydraulics, pneumatics, specific servo motors and stuff like that. You learn basic components of a machinery, yeah. But then what you do not learn is how to take data from there and actually convert that data into information and insight. And that's the portion where I feel the engineers who do not have a background in data or data analytics have a difficulty trying to analyze it. So if you are an engineer and you're doing let's say some programming work in R or Python, you could easily take that up and try to analyze where there's a correlation. You can sift through millions of data points and actually find out what are the erroneous ones, and you can remove them. And you do a lot of data cleaning, and that's a majority of the time to where the engineers struggle because they see a lot of things, but they don't know what to do with it. And if you can't connect the data to the reality, the data is useless. Having this exposure of both working with data analytics and the process mining portion of it, along with the background of what happens actually physically on the floor, helped me put things together and derive insights, which was not easy.
I imagine that's all. So I guess you get to the point, if you can get to the point where you can see a trend within the analytics and then kind of tie that back to events or the way processes happen on the shop floor, that's where the powerful things start to happen then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. Do you have any examples of kind of transformations that have, improvements that have been made through?
Sure. I can show you some things which I usually look at, and I can show you a raw data of something and then how that was converted into a finished stuff as well, which took very, very little time to put together. But if you didn't know what you were seeing, then you're not able to analyze it. And if you take a look at it, you will probably be like, hey, this looks simple, but people don't take the next step to analyze it. And that's mm-hmm. the kind of stuff that happens. I can share a screen and try to show you something that I did for analyzing my inventories, for example. So let me share my screen and hope this comes across. Let's see. Let me know if you can see it.
Perfect. Yes, got it.
All right. So, usually data about inventory and so on is inside ERP packages. And it's in a form where you can't see. It's in numbers and screens. You have to scroll across a lot of screens to find out what's happening. And what you're missing sometimes is, like, what is your target? Because if you don't have a target inside, you just have no idea what's going on. And you, for example, I put this together and then we were like, okay, at the end of the year, we want to be at $15 million for the year in inventory. And then you see you blew through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, there is chip shortages and stuff like that happening in the industry, and then you're not able to control your inventory, right? But if you make it visual, people will get it. People see it. And if this data point is just sitting inside ERP and it's individually managed by different people, and if you don't give individual targets to them, they just don't understand what's happening. And they just don't know how they can respond to it.
Yes.
And that's the difficulty. When they see this, and they only, if you see a full bar and you don't understand what's inside it, you've got to split it up.
Yeah.
And until you split it up, you can't see, oh, there's a problem with warm forgings. Okay. So then let's go into that. And what is the problem in warm forging? Then you dig into and see, well, what are the top 10 items that are sitting there? Mm-hmm. And inside the top 10 items, you drill in to find out, okay, there is this part, there's so much sitting in there. And why is that? And and what can I do? Did a customer back out orders? And why did he back out orders? Can we project, give a different proposal to the customer? Or shall we cancel our orders going forward? So those are kind of simple things. But if you don't know what's going on and you can't visualize the numbers, you just can't see what's happening. And, if you go dig deeper and, let's say our inventory gets bloated up and you see that there is a lot of steel getting piled up, my raw materials getting piled up because my orders are getting canceled, the chip shortage or short notice, and then you need to find out where are the culprits, what you can really act on. You want to find out what is slow moving, what is things that is not touched for a long period of time, and you have to create new KPIs and new things out of the data that you have. Your normal data but might show you just a date that you received the item the last time. And in SAP, it might again show you the date the last time you did the transaction on it. But you got to convert that into meaningful insight. You got to do a data cleaning to say, okay, what is today's date? And what is the date of the last transaction? Now you calculate the difference between those dates. Now that becomes the number of dates it's not touched, right? So then you take that variable and that you call it as the day since last received, day since the last posted. And then you can draw the magnitude of the money that is sitting. Mm-hmm. And then when you create targets for that, you can take a look at, okay, so here are my culprits. Mm-hmm. So you can clearly see, you know, these are fast moving things, no problems, but there are the balloons that are coming out. So from the cloud of just an Excel table, mm-hmm. you end up bringing insight saying, okay, let's talk to this customer, what's going on there? And let's talk to mm-hmm. this customer, what's mm-hmm. going on there? And I can find reasons behind on the floor, what's happening. And this is, I do this hands-on myself. This encourages my people to learn and do things themselves. I mean, this is motivating for them because they sit and see a bunch of tables all the time, but they're not able to make some meaningful insight out of it. And they're not able to go and talk to the any other party who could make change.
Yeah.
So that is the insight. And this is the kind of thing that you can do on a day-to-day basis to enhance your company and your business as a whole. And I think this is where it's going, you know, where right now this work is done by a person. Mm-hmm. In the future, what I'm envisioning and what I'm working towards is a machine learning algorithm, which automatically learns this thing.
Yeah.
Right. So this could be monitored by a machine and it could throw out insights. Mm-hmm. And the neat portion about all these things is like, it's coming to a point wherein you can just ask a verbal question, or you can actually write there is a visual called Q&A visual. You can just type, what was the sales for this in whatever, you know, you can ask, if you can ask a question in plain English, it's able to get the data out of the model to bring it up. But somebody's got to know how to build a model, and somebody's got to know how to. So when somebody sees a model like that, they get, oh my God, that's complicated, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the point. If you, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You slice it up,
mm-hmm.
right? It's mm-hmm. the same thing. So you take bits and pieces of data and start connecting it to derive insights. And that's the way you would achieve, you know, great things going forward. And all of this analysis, I think it should be part of leadership and also analytics teams that are reporting to the leaders. The leaders have to know to ask those questions in order to derive right results. And then also to know when something is presented, they have to know, what else can I achieve? You know, if nothing is shown interesting to them, they do not know what else to ask, right? So if leaders have some insight into the way data could be cleaned up, the way data could be visualized, you have a lot of things to achieve, because you could really find out where your value is going, or where your process is suffering. You know, we can derive stuff like, I can show you another one where this is actually a machine data. So this is machine process data.
Mm-hmm.
So this is live from the machine. As the machine runs, this is, it is telling each stage of the process what is happening. And we, you know, if you see the machine running, it has a PLC, it has data behind it, it's running, but you cannot make, unless you take the data and section by section, see what KPI that you can derive and mm-hmm. where is the, how much is this knob can be turned. You have to find mm-hmm. that out, and you have mm-hmm. to visualize it. Then an engineer or even a high-tech operator can understand, oh, I am running 435 millimeters per second while my machine can go to 600 mm-hmm. on this thing. So mm-hmm. that's how we will derive value. Until you visualize it, nobody knows. And you can really see how much is, you know, every stroke, what is the variation from process by process. So if anything goes erratic, it's right there in the face for him. When he sees the physical thing running, he cannot see that there is some change, and because it's happening in microseconds. So, you know, somebody's not able to see a difference of 10 microseconds, and, you know, 10 microseconds here, you know, 100 microseconds there, and so on. At the end of the day, it's money going out. Yeah. And until you visualize it, you're not able to see what's going on, and you cannot solve the problems that you can't see. And that's basically where having knowledge of putting together the data with what's going on in the process is going to help.
Yeah.
And in the future, trying to derive automated machine learning algorithms that can do this job for the engineers, for the people on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see manufacturing going. So it's pretty exciting time for me, as if you ask me, to look at what's happening out there. Yeah,
it definitely is. Thank you for that. That was amazing. Yeah, really impressive what you've put together there. I have a couple of follow-up questions based off that. Around about the area of how, assuming someone is maybe starting from scratch and doesn't have that level of data and analytics in place, the questions are around about how would someone get started in kind of like identifying the right questions to ask, or deciding what set of data to start to clean up, to focus on first. Sure. And I was wondering if it should be kind of either driven from top down or bottom up. So would you start, looking at the top level profit and loss of the set of accounts and look at, where the most costs are assigned? Or would you start bottom up, as in, going to a machine and looking at one of the, like that example that you gave before, maybe this machine is running at 75% of its capacity, all day. What do you think the best approach is?
So I would actually start with the problem that you have, and you narrow down to a zone, and then get the people around to form a team, because one person might not know everything, and it's not possible. So I would get together a small team with a small problem in hand and give them some time and say, let's learn this and try what we can do best with it, right? Mm-hmm. You set like a sprint of let's take a week, okay? So this week we will work 3 hours every day on this specific problem. Let's see what we can put together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you set the people with a specific agenda and set time, and it'll be amazing. And you put them all in one room, you take some engineers from IT, you take some engineers from the floor, and it's amazing what they will come up with, because they see it. And you have a lot of these things that you see out there. It's open source. It's on YouTube. I mean, I learned Power BI off my own. I didn't go to a course or anything like that. I used, people like SQL BI, Alberto Ferrari and Michael Russo. There are Kerbal.com, GuyInACube.com. So these are like YouTube channels. Mm-hmm. Excellent content. And you just buy a single book, and you just follow the courses through online. So it's amazing what you can learn if you put some dedicated effort towards a specific problem. You take a problem and you try to see, let's say you have your sales and you want to drill down your sales to understand what are the trends, is what that's happening. And you see a lot of stuff that is out there, and you will see that there's so much opportunity within every organization to take that data and mine it and to bring up insights. Mm. And as a leader, if you spend even an hour a week looking at data and how I can learn something from the data, and if you see it regularly, you would start making some insights.
Yeah.
So I set aside some time to take a look and to grow it. And to me, it took me a couple of months to learn Power BI to build something. But then it's a skill set now you have that you could use for years. Because you have data analytics, then the software might change, but the concept remains the same.
Yeah.
And you are able to craft things faster and go from there.
So
that's what I would say, where to go to and how to approach the problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you take a problem like a P&L and start digging in, it becomes difficult in the beginning to grasp it. If you take a narrow zone and put a team together, it works better, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. And you think that it's worth everyone learning them the skill themselves when trying to, rather than leaving it to, you know, when you mentioned before assembling a team, rather than leaving it to the IT person on the team, you think there's benefits in trying to learn that skill for yourself?
Yes, because certain questions and certain topics are better understood if all the people in the team understand it. So let's say you take a concept of a measure is, you know, like a calculation in Excel, right? Mm-hmm. Like a cell formula in Excel, you could take it like that. But if everyone understood what you could do with a measure, what kind of calculation you could do, then you would ask the right calculation to be done. You would ask, the leader would ask the right calculation to be done, or else somebody would just give you a sum of something. You know, what if, you know, what if I could do a very complex statistical calculation and do it over a certain range of time, and, you know, you could do much, much more complex things. If you know to ask that question, and you can look through what is being built and say, hey, I would like to redo this calculation this way, and then the specialist could do it faster maybe. But somebody's got to know to ask those questions in order to drive more results. I mean, faster results as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, sure. So how do you think the manufacturing landscape will change over the next kind of decade, either in the US or either worldwide? What do you think are going to be the big drivers over the next decade?
I think data-driven decision-making is going to be commonplace and going forward, like the stuff that I showed you. You know, leaders and engineers and people are going to be needed to interpret the results and to ask more knowledgeable questions. And each of the machining modules and every one of the pieces of the puzzle in the value stream is going to be smart, right? It's going to put out a lot of data, right? The engineers and brain power is going to be needed to just take all of this and make it into meaningful insight. And I feel like over a period of time, certain industries will become like a black box almost, where certain things are fine tweaked and there is like automated machine learning algorithms or AI engines that are running to interpret and optimize it further. And then the people on top are going to look at the outcomes or potential choices for those algorithms to take. You know, it could give us some meaningful courses of direction saying, look, you could imagine almost like Iron Man kind of thing. That's what's going to happen, right? I mean, you see Iron Man having Jarvis helping him out and saying, you know, this is at this percent, can I change this or can I change that? You know, that is not out of the reach.
Yeah.
In 20 years from now, I think in 10, 15 years from now, you know, this basis with which the innovation is going on, I think it's quite possible that we could go to a point where AI and ML are becoming the main interface into your manufacturing. Because and the options could be thrown out based on out from those AI engines, and the leaders and people would be making decisions from based on that.
Yeah.
What choices that it throws out.
Yeah. I guess that would mean a change in the skill set of the people who are kind of traditionally hired into manufacturing organizations. Do you think it needs, you know, hiring of people with different skill sets or just training of the people, you know, either, you know, like mechanical engineers or managers? Yeah, is it a training or is it a different skill set?
Happen. You know, there's going to be new people coming in, and the new engineers, the young talent who come in, would need to know about programming and about dealing with data and trying to connect the pieces of the puzzle. And you have, you know, a huge set of workforce that's already engaged at work. We need to now teach them. This is interesting stuff. You know, you no longer have to use your muscle for things. You know, things are going to be automated. Things are going to be, you're going to use your brain, you know, for changing things. So it's exciting times. And if we empower people the right way, I think you can make it a very interesting journey for everyone involved. That's where I think it's going to happen. Both sides, you know, for example, we are starting our own apprenticeship program because we would like to grow our own people. It's a combination of mechatronics, like mechanical and electronics and robotics. Mm-hmm. You got to need engineers with all of the skill sets, and that doesn't exist. So we have to create it of our own.
Yeah.
So that'll be a commonplace going forward. It's just not just us. Probably everyone would jump in.
Yeah. That sounds really exciting. Yeah. That does sound good. Okay. I've got a few short questions just before we wrap up. I think you've already covered this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, just in case there's anything else though. Just are there any tools or techniques that have helped you, get where you are today? Obviously, we've talked about Power BI and that, you know, in depth. Anything else come to mind?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there are other things as well. Right now, there is like digital twin technology, like simulation, wherein you could simulate your entire facility scenario, like, you know, COVID situation. There is things like that. So discrete event simulation is another topic, which could also be interesting for the future. The way I see it is we need to be curious, you know, use your downtimes. Because all of us are getting frustrated with things not happening as per our plans. Mm-hmm. So I try to steer my energy towards learning during those times. And that helps you bring something new, and it satisfies your curiosity and keeps you engaged and in achieving new things. So Power BI was something that I learned, and digital discrete event simulation using Simio was something I learned during the pandemic. I got 4 weeks of stuck at home, so took a book, started learning. Added discrete event simulation to my portfolio. So I rebuilt the entire plant in 3D. So you could see forklifts going around like toys, moving material, and you could see what's happening. And I could see, you know. Use your time that's available to learn. You know, learning is a journey that I feel it will not end until you're alive. Right?
Yeah.
So you've got to learn till you die. And at least that's my motto to keep going and keep myself contributing to the world.
As far as it comes,
yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's great. Well, it sounds like you're doing a great job with that contribution at the moment. So thank you. Ben, just wrapping up with, what's the best way for people to either find out more about you or about what Hirschvogel are up to at the moment?
Sure. About my company, you can find out in www.hirschvogel.com. That would be the best place to get know about my company. Mm-hmm. And about myself, they could follow me on Twitter at A Thandapani. They could find me on LinkedIn, Arun Kumar Thandapani. Those are the places where I'm active. And you can also directly get a hold of me by email at arun.thandapani@hirschvogel.com or athandapani@gmail.com. Yeah. So those would be the places that people could
get a hold of. Perfect. Thank you. We'll drop the links to those websites and the social media sites in the description then. Thanks. Really great to hear about what you're doing at the moment and some of those really kind of innovative analytics things that you're doing. It was great to see that. Thanks a lot for your time, Arun, and hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much, Martin. Have a great one. It was a pleasure talking to you. I wish all of your viewers a happy new year. Thank you.
Thank you.